The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Happy Friday, everyone, and happy Juneteenth. Now, we've said that in previous years. The Juneteenth is officially tomorrow. It's June 19th, but tomorrow's a Saturday. So today is the federal holiday. All right, so Joe Biden just signed it into law yesterday. And so it's not fully in effect. I don't think the banks are closed today, for instance, because they didn't have time to get everything in place. And from what I read, if it's correct, it may not even be in place by this time next year, but certainly by 2023. But that doesn't matter because if you're a federal employee, you got today off because Juneteenth is now a national federal holiday. I believe it's our 12th or 13th. I'm not quite sure which one. Either way, it's a little late, but better late than never, I suppose. And it's a good reason for a holiday. Certainly better than Columbus Day, which really at this point should be changed to Indigenous Peoples Day, because from what we've learned about Columbus, I remember as a kid, you know, and I'm old, so I went to elementary school in the 60s in New York City, and it was, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue in 1492. The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. See, some of it stuck. Unfortunately, what we were told was all bullshit because, Columbus, not a good guy, and didn't discover America, but we don't need to regurgitate that right now. But just saying, you know, maybe we should revisit Columbus Day. Just saying, you know, I think Italian Americans get bent out of shape because they look at that as like Italian Heritage Day. But hey, Italians, you don't want to hang your head on Christopher Columbus. Okay. Okay. So today, Jason Leopold is going to be checking in with us a little later. And the reason is, well, I really don't need a reason to talk to Jason Leopold. He's a dear friend, who I love talking to anytime. And thankfully our friendship, you know, transcends the radio show. We're friends off the air. But we met through this work. And I don't know why we hit it off. We just did. I think it might be our mutual love of music. Cause you know, Jason is a music guy and he's got the best collection of band t-shirts of anybody I know. And, so when he joins us today, if you're watching on one of the video streams, we stream on YouTube, on Facebook Live, on Twitter and Twitch. So if you're watching on one of the video streams, he'll be joining us with video. Check and see what t-shirt he's wearing. I have no idea what it'll be, but I promise you there will be a band, a rock band on his shirt because he's got the best collection ever. Someday he's going to have to like do a display of them. Anyway, so that's happening. So not only is it Juneteenth tomorrow, but Sunday is Father's Day. And, you know, Father's Day is, it's a tough one for me. You know, as you get older, you lose parents. And so, my dad now has been gone, God, I want to say about 16 years. You know, Father's Day. So the point I'm trying to make, and I lost my mother when I was 19. So if you are fortunate enough to have your parents still in your life, make a big deal out of it. Go out of your way to do something nice for dad. I wish I had that problem. And you know, he'd be way, you know, even if he didn't die when he did, he'd be gone by now because old age. I mean, he was born in 1925. So, do something nice for him. And I guess I'll launch into my commercial here because I'm in between portraits. So a great gift idea for Father's Day is a pet portrait. You know, I've been sort of moonlighting on the side. I took up painting as a hobby during the pandemic, and I've fallen into this pet portrait thing. So you can see if you're watching on video, you see the photos, the paintings hanging behind me. I did those. The really cool one is behind my head. You can't really see it. Anyway, obviously, I don't have time to get one done by Sunday, but I could put together a lovely gift certificate for you, and so your dad can be in on it. Just saying, something to think about. Maybe later in the show, when we take a break, I'll show you some of my more recent works. So I told you, okay, Jason's coming. We've got a few different stories to tell. Oh, and I'm guest hosting the broadcast today because I'm a glutton for punishment because I'm not stressed out enough. So I will be in for Brad Friedman tonight on the broadcast, which you can access at here. It's on the Progressive Voices Network at 8 p.m. Eastern. But you can also get it from bradblog.com whenever you want to listen. It'll be up before 8 p.m. Eastern. So, but if you're a regular listener of this show, you've heard it because I'm sharing the interview I did with Dennis Kucinich last week on the broadcast today. Dennis Kucinich did throw his hat in the ring. He is officially running to be mayor of Cleveland yet again. When he was first mayor, I think he was like the youngest big city mayor in the country. I think he was 31 years old. And now he's 74. So he's running again, and you know he's got good name recognition there in Cleveland. I wish him luck. I hope he wins. I really do. Other stuff going on. You know, I don't watch right-wing media, and frankly, it makes me sad, a bit angry, but sad more that there's even that designation that there is right-wing media. And there's a hell of a lot of it from Fox, you know, the fake news channel, Newsmax, who had the gall to tag one of my, you know, we stream on Facebook too. I got my first notice of somebody stepping up and saying I violated their copyright on Facebook, and it was Newsmax. I promise you, I have never taken anything from Newsmax and turned it around on this show. I've never been to their website. So I challenged them on it. And knowing how Facebook works, I'll probably be banned from Facebook pretty soon. But, you know, that's all right. Anyway, I digress. Sorry, I go off on these tangents. Anyway, where was I going with that? The Facebook thing? Make me sick. Should I use Fox to lose weight? No, don't do that. But the media thing. I'm losing my train of thought. I have not needed a weekend this badly in a long time. And I know I've been blaming it on Mercury being in retrograde. But, you know, I'll blame anything right now. It's probably lack of sleep. But bear with me, because there's stuff I'm getting to. And I don't know where I was going with that. All right. So I've got a couple of things. Yeah, Newsmax has protocol. I don't know. I've never watched their channel and I've never been to their website, but they flagged something that I ran on my show one day this week and claimed it was their video. I took nothing from Newsmax. I promise you. Now I did have taken stuff off of Twitter that, especially Aaron Rupar of Vox, not Fox, but Vox, posts all kinds of stuff. He covers the Republicans for Vox with a V, and he sometimes takes video off of Fox. And I've shared some of that, but it's news, and I do a news-based program, so it's fair use. So no matter what, Newsmax is, you know, this is what they do. Oh, that's what it was. I started saying, I hate that I have to say there's right-wing media. And I'd say there's left-wing media, but there really isn't. There really isn't, unless you go to public television and parts of free speech TV. But other parts are not quite progressive. In terms of the mainstream corporate media, the American right-wing, who's always wrong, has the lock on that. And that's why we're on the internet. And hopefully we can keep the internet somewhat fair and open. But nothing is. I mean, everything is opposite world. You know, I talk about opposite world all the time. And there's a great, the Daily Show did this mashup that was so good. It just proves how the Republicans, how Fox and the media, the conservative. It's not even conservative. They're not conservatives. They're wing nuts. They're nut jobs. They're crazy. They're Trumpers. They're maggots. And how they twist things, and they gaslight. We've talked about gaslighting. You know, it's a word that's been around for a long time. It came from a movie called Gaslighting that was, I don't know, from the 40s, I want to say. And gaslighting is now a thing. This is what they do. So I want to share with, oh, I know. I know why I can't find the video. If you're wondering why I'm hesitating, I'm looking for the video. And I realize I'm not going to play the video because it is from Comedy Central. It's The Daily Show. And they hit me with copyright shit if I play their video. But I can play the audio. And really, that's all you need here. So here's the thing. Fox, for the last couple of days, has been gaslighting the whoever watches them about Joe Biden's trip to Europe. They're saying that, first of all the reviews have been fairly positive, right? They've been, you know, he did good. And with Joe Biden, it's he didn't have a major gaffe. He didn't screw anything up. He, you know, he had a few brain farts, but so do I. And I'm, you know, 17 years younger than he is. So, you know, for as much as they talk about his mental incapacity and all that nonsense, it's all bullshit, right? But that's what Fox is leading with. So The Daily Show actually took what Fox said, what Sean Hannity and the other minions on Fox said, and they did a mashup with Trump's meeting with Putin in Helsinki from, you remember that and how disastrous it was. And well, and it's a mashup. I'll just leave it at that. So from The Daily Show, take it away.
The entire world seeing firsthand how weak, how frail, how confused. I don't know what to even tell you that he's trying to say here.
Most importantly, we have a lot of good things to talk about and things to talk about.
Was asked if he trusted Putin, and he said yes. How could you trust a former KGB agent?
I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be.
Got completely confused mid-sentence during a meeting.
In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't.
Everybody's getting right along, and that's what his goal is. Consensus. Everyone to get along. It's not about what America, what's best for America.
Getting along with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing. And I really think the world wants to see us get along.
He gave that stage to Vladimir Putin.
What?
The world watched and maybe believed him.
I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today.
He let Vladimir Putin run circles around him.
He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators.
Oh my God, you remember that?
To the 12 people.
I remember
think that's
that
an
one.
Incredible offer.
It was always America first, and candidly, that's not the message that Putin got tonight.
I think that the United States has been foolish, and I think we're all to blame.
This trip has been an utter train wreck. Frankly, I find it embarrassing.
I find him embarrassing. Way to go, Daily Show. So, you know, it's the rubber and glue thing. I'm rubber, you're glue. Everything you say bounces off me and sticks to you. Everything Sean Hannity and the rest of those things on the air at Fox said apply to what Donald Trump did when he met with Putin. It is insane. And by the way, here's just an interesting aside. Before Biden and Putin sat down and had their 2 hour or so meeting, you know, Biden was praising Trump and putting down Biden. I mean, Putin was praising Trump and putting down Biden and, you know, just doing Donald Trump's bidding. But after they met, his tune changed. Here are some quotes from Vladimir Putin after meeting with Joe Biden. Quote, speaking of Joe Biden, he perfectly knows the matter. He is fully concentrated and knows what he wants to achieve, and he does it very shrewdly. And then Putin pushed back on what he characterized as media attempts to cast Biden as physically frail. And he noted that Biden, the president, is 78 years old and in great shape. And he said he's in great shape and did great, even though their meeting came at the end of a long, grueling trip that included both the G7 and NATO summits. But if you listen to Fox, he was a walking disaster area. It is, once again, gaslighting. This is what they do. And another attempt, another example of gaslighting. Do I have that here? That's not it. I don't. I thought I pulled this audio. I know. Well, I'll see if I can bring it up on the screen. CNN did a lengthy, it was kind of long, and that's why I'm hesitant to play it, but I think I will anyway. You know, I've had this long hate affair with Morning Jerk. You know, I'd sort of hate watch it, but... And I always have to have the news on in the background in the morning. As I'm getting dressed, I need to know what's going on because I immediately come in here. I write and record what's news when I wake up and I get the day going. So I have the news on. I have it on all night. I couldn't watch either CNN or MSNBC in the morning because they were both not good. But CNN has an anchor, a woman named Brianna Keeler, who I really like. She's tough and she's smart and she's a little bit snarky and she doesn't take shit from anybody. She's on in the morning and she's really good. Yeah, I know. White Rabbit said Bolton was on the other day. Ugh. Why they want to rehabilitate these criminals, I don't know, but they do. And, you know, you can always change the channel. You can always turn it off. And I avail myself of those options all the time. But today, John Berman and Brianna Keeler decided to debunk the top Republican gaslighting themes around January 6th. I mean, it's astounding. We've all heard it. You've heard it from Paul Gosar claiming that, you know, the woman who was going through the window into the speaker's lobby, who was shot and killed by the Capitol Police, who were doing their job protecting the members of Congress, that she was executed. That kind of nonsense. You know, it was like a tourist day at the Capitol. People, they were well-behaved. It was just like a regular day of tourists. That's the kind of shit they're saying, even though you and I saw it with our own eyes, and we see the new video being released every day, right? So CNN this morning, they were having none of it, and they decided to, well, debunk the top 10. So you can take some of this on your Father's Day, Juneteenth weekend. And if you run into some Trumpers who insist it was a false flag, it was Antifa and BLM doing it, you can tell them bullshit. And here's the proof.
You see that video with your own eyes. You see that horror with your own eyes. It makes it all the more stunning that some Republicans and some deranged entertainers keep developing new and provably false ways to say the insurrection did not happen. What stands in the way of their attempt to whitewash January 6th? Reality.
Reality.
First, the claim that the Capitol attack was just a tour, which is how Republican Andrew Clyde of Georgia describes it, a normal tourist visit. That assumes your idea of a normal tourist visit to the Capitol involves breaking and climbing through a window, rifling through lawmakers'
Hello.
Desks,
yeah.
ransacking offices, and beating law enforcement officers. By the way, it was Clyde who barricaded the door to these tourists.
Yeah, the guy...
Number two, rioters not armed. In the last 24 hours, the Justice Department charging a rioter with unlawfully bringing a semi-automatic handgun onto Capitol grounds. Rioters also use bear spray. They use flagpoles, as you saw there, baseball bats, all of these things to viciously attack police.
Number three, January 6th was a peaceful protest. Another offensively absurd claim easily disproved with, you know, pictures. See above, rioters use bear spray, flagpoles, baseball bats to viciously attack police.
And number four, a myth. The FBI orchestrated the deadly assault on January 6th. Fox's BS ringmaster Tucker Carlson this week breathing air into this false flag conspiracy theory that originated from a right-wing website that has been flagged by social media for being BS. This conspiracy theory is based on references to unindicted co-conspirators in several indictments against Capitol rioters. Legal analysts, including our own Ellie Honig and anyone you will talk to of any sort of merit, have called this legally impossible.
Legally impossible.
Number five, Trump will be reinstated. First it was March, now it's August, a theory that Trump himself is pushing to allies. This is A, absurd, B, impossible, and C, dangerous, and could provoke even more violence.
And number six, conspiracy theory here. Members of left-wing extremist group Antifa infiltrated Capitol rioters. Here is what FBI Director Chris Wray told the Senate Judiciary Committee about this in March.
Is there any evidence at all that it was organized or planned or carried out by groups like Antifa or Black Lives Matter?
Do you believe this nonsense?
We have not seen any evidence to that effect thus far.
Hello.
Number seven, the theory that fake Trump supporters attended the rally. Here's FBI Director Christopher Wray at the same March Senate hearing.
Do you have any evidence that the Capitol attack was organized by, quote, fake Trump protesters?
No.
We have not seen evidence of that at this stage.
And lastly, don't call it an insurrection. Republican Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie, who is among a group of Republican lawmakers who this week voted against a measure to award congressional gold medals to members of the Capitol Police and the D.C. Metropolitan Police for their bravery, telling The Hill, quote, if they just wanted to give the police recognition, they could have done it without trying to make it partisan, without sticking that in there. Now, by that, he means the truth, the word insurrection, defined by Merriam-Webster as an act or instance of revolting against civil authority or an established government. Here's more of the harrowing video of that day.
And this video,
what
in case you haven't seen it,
would
is
you call it
horrific? It was an insurrection. So I appreciate CNN there debunking the Fox lies. That it's a hoax that they're perpetrating on the American people. And I have to say this again. I repeat it incessantly, but a lot of people don't understand. They could not say the things they do on the Fox Not News channel on Fox's over-the-air television stations. Because if they did, they'd be subject to having their licenses taken away. Because you cannot, under the FCC rules, call yourself news and make shit up. They just can't. Even if that is, you know, their unofficial slogan. You know their unofficial slogan, right?
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
You know, they admit it. But on cable, they can do it. The thing is, over the air, the FCC has rules, and we could file a complaint with the FCC. It's a cumbersome process, but you can do it and you can challenge their licenses. It doesn't work that way with cable. There are no licenses to challenge. They can get away with saying we're news and just make shit up as they go along. That's a big problem today. And that's why so many people are so misinformed, because they get their so-called news from these bullshit sites that make shit up, from Fox to Newsmax to OAN. They're taking over because they get ratings, because I guess the poorly educated people like to watch it. So with that as an intro, I'm going to bring in a real journalist who reports the truth, who breaks stories, and occasionally is recognized for his amazing work. Jason Leopold, he's a senior investigative reporter at BuzzFeed News, and this week was recognized by the Pulitzer Organization for this amazing two-year investigation that he was, you were the lead reporter on, were you not, Jason Leopold?
I was, yes.
You were, on the FinCEN files.
One of the lead reporters.
Jason Leopold, welcome to the show. Oh, and look at you. You made a liar out of me, because I told everyone when you came on screen to look at your shirt and it's going to be a band shirt. But it's not a band shirt. It's a KNAC shirt, which was pure rock out of Long Beach, California. Pure rock was like the best slogan for that station. I have some good friends who used to work there. KNAC was not my kind of music, but a cool station.
Yeah, I like the old metal. You know, that's what it was back in the day.
You know what? We've got a really lousy connection.
Yeah, some feedback there.
You got feedback too? You know what? Yeah. I'm going to do this with you. I did this yesterday. On the bottom of the screen, you see where it says where the microphone is? It says mute. There's a little arrow next to it on the on the Zoom screen. Click on that arrow and it says select a microphone and tell me what microphone it has checked.
Built in.
Built in. Is there any other choice?
How's that?
It might be better. No, no, no different. Well, hopefully it'll clear up because it tends to do. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, but it is definitely getting some feedback there.
It is weird. You want to disconnect and come back in and see if it gets any better?
Yeah, I'll come back.
Okay.
See how that is.
Okay, because, you know, it's live radio. Somebody was bitching. Is it going to be live or recorded? It is live. So if we had recorded this a couple hours ago, I would have been able to edit that part out and just start over when we had good sound. You see, you like to bitch about, it's not live. When I pre-tape something, I usually only do it earlier in the day or maybe the day before for scheduling reasons. But occasionally, you know, there's technical reasons too. So anyway, let's see. Hopefully this is better. Fingers crossed. You know, the internet, it's either good or it's not good. And sometimes it's not great. All right, Jason, is that any better? And now I'm not even hearing. Oh, because I had you potted down.
How's that?
I don't know. We'll find out. So, okay, it seems to be a little better. At least you're not breaking up. So, Jason Leopold, cool KNAC t-shirt. KNAC went off the air years ago, as did most creative radio, not only in LA, but around the country. Which is kind of sad.
Yeah, it was there. I'm nostalgic for a bunch of old radio stations that I used to listen to religiously. In New York, it was WLIR.
Oh,
before it went to WDRE.
Uh huh.
Had all the great, what they used to call alternative music, right? It's how they define bands like U2 and all the college rock back in the day.
Right.
And then from afar, I always admired KNAC, which is what KNAC, how we refer to it, because it had that hard rock metal.
Yes.
And then there were a bunch of stations in like Baltimore. I like old radio stations.
For the most part, they don't exist anymore. They've all been generic sized by being bought out by the big corporations. Clear Channel became iHeart, or as I call them, iHeart Media. And they made everything generic, so there's very little creativity. It was a week ago today that Mark Thompson from the Mark and Brian Show joined me and we reminisced about our life 30 years ago. I can't believe it's 30 years ago. I worked with them from 1990 to 94. And during that time, we became the number one morning show in LA. We dethroned Rick Dees. It was a thing. And, it's wild to now 25, 30 years later, look back on it and go, wow, that was an experience. But that was when radio was creative.
Yeah, no, it was great. There was a time when radio, was great. I think, when we were having our DM chat, I remember back in New York, a couple of stations obviously I listened to like everyone else, WPLJ.
Yeah.
And I had this real menial job where I was just kind of answering phones. So I would always try to be the 95th caller, and I would win. I actually won a whole bunch of times.
Wow.
I won tickets to I think there was one time I won tickets to Billy Joel at Yankee Stadium. I was just, that's where I would discover new music because the DJs would play, the music. And there was there was also this great station in New York, 103.5.
Oh, WAPP. I remember WAPP. Yep.
WAPP, the Apple.
The Apple. That's and the summer, they signed on the air one summer. I'm trying to remember who they were owned by Doubleday. This was at the time when one company could only own 7 radio stations around the country. So Doubleday owned WAPP in New York and they signed on the air commercial free all summer. It was awesome. I was working at WPLJ at the time, but at that time, PLJ was Power 95. They had gone top 40. Right. So I didn't listen to the station I worked at. I was an NEW person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 102.7.
102.7, WNEW-FM. Yeah. That was always, that was my dream job. That's where I wanted to work. I never got to work there.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel like so old looking back on this because all these radio stations are gone. They're all gone.
Radio. I still listen to CDs in my car and people think I'm nuts. Yeah, it makes me feel very old. But, you know, there was a time when it was just, you know, it was just great. It was fun to listen to. And like I said, you know, like the first station that I really, really loved, you know, back at Long Island Radio, WLIR.
LIR. It was like the original alternative station with Donna, Larry the Duck and Donna Donna and personalities, right?
They had great bands. It's where I discovered, you know, that kind of music. And I remember trekking down to Long Island to, you know, to see some of these bands play because nobody had ever heard of them before in the U.S. And, you know, this was the station that was giving them, you know, their first shot. You know, exposure to an audience.
So. And all these stations that we name checked are all gone. And the ones that are still there, like, you know, WPLJ is now a Christian way station.
Unbelievable.
Right? LIR, I don't even know what they are now, but none of them are still there. So if you're in a city that has a good station, chances are it's on the left end of the dial. They're non-commercial. New York has WFUV. It's out of Fordham University.
Right? Oh, no, Fairleigh Dickinson.
No, it's FUV. It's Fordham. FUV is Fordham.
Okay, got it. Yep.
So, but anyway, we've got off on a tangent because I was surprised. I was waiting to see like a Rage Against the Machine t-shirt or, let me ask you this. Are you a Foo Fighters fan?
I do like Foo Fighters. And, you know, I have a great Foo Fighters story. So I used to have another life.
Yeah.
Where I worked at, you know, before journalism was always going to be the fallback career. And I worked in, I worked for a bunch of record labels, you know, back in the 90s. And in the, I guess it was like 95, maybe earlier, they were opening in Times Square, the Virgin Megastore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was grand opening of it. Anyway, I worked right next door at BMG Music and, Foo Fighters were giving their very first show ever.
Oh, how funny.
I was able to get right in there and see it. And it was kind of amazing. I like the Foo Fighters. I think that there's a little bit of a point where there's a little too much overexposure.
Yeah. Well, they're like huge. Right. Because they're now like the biggest rock band, I guess, because the Rolling Stones are in their 80s and, you know, Beatles are mostly gone. And, you know, it's Foo Fighters. It's the next generation. So they're the superstar band. Yeah. Well, a friend of mine is the newest member of Foo Fighters. Rami Jaffe is the keyboard player. And he's been with them for a number of years. And then they made him a full-time. It's got to be 5 or 6 years ago already. But I met Rami. He was a session player in L.A. If you look him up, he's played on so many records. And then he was on with the Wallflowers. And I became good friends with him and Jacob Dylan. I lived not too far away from Jacob. But Rami and I have stayed friends over the years. And they played a show. You know, now the concerts are coming back again. They played a show last night in Agoura, California what's it called? The Canyon Club.
The Canyon Club.
It holds 600 people.
They played
the Canyon Club last night.
That I would love to have seen.
And they're playing Madison Square Garden, I believe, tonight. I emailed Rami last night and I said, hey, do you have 5 minutes? Can you jump on the phone with me and talk about it? They had protests because they have, they're filling up to capacity, but they have a, you must be vaccinated requirement. Right. And so they had picketers outside of the Canyon Club. And there are picketers, I guess, outside of Madison Square Garden picketing the concert because of their, you know, you must be vaccinated policy.
I saw that. I got the notice from Live Nation or whatever, who's promoting the show, saying that you have to, in order to get in, you have to be vaccinated.
Good for them. Because I don't want to be in an arena filled with people who I don't know have been vaccinated. Right. But Rami said, I would, if it were me, I would love to. You know that. But he's now in Foo Fighters land and everything has to go through PR and publicity and everything's about Dave. And he's like, so I'm sorry. But it's cool. So anyway, but they're playing and music is back. Have you been to see any live music yet?
I haven't, but I have checked. That was the first thing I did a couple of days ago, particularly here in LA, you know, after they lifted, you know, the kind of the mask mandate.
Yeah.
But there's a number of shows coming up in, you know, later in the summer. I saw Patti Smith, who I love, is playing the Ford Theater.
Oh, wow. John Anson Ford Theater. That is my favorite venue in Los Angeles.
It's great. So I'm going to go hopefully check that out.
Awesome.
In September. And it's been hard. I haven't seen music in a year and a half. You know, I used to hit at least a couple of concerts a month.
Right. I can't even remember. I had tickets to see Todd Rundgren. That was the last show I had tickets for, and it got canceled because of COVID. It was last June. It was a year ago. So, and now it seems like everybody's touring, and I got notices both Van Morrison and Eric Clapton are coming down here.
I saw the same thing with Van Morrison.
In the past, in the past, I would have gone to see both of them because I like both of them, but they've both gone off the rails and they're anti-vaxxers and they're conspiracy theorists and they're crazy. So
I will have to admit that it taints the music a bit.
It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah, which is unfortunate.
All right, Jason, enough music. We could do this forever. I mean, we really could. David came in during the break before, and he's like, should I get you a band t-shirt to put on? I've given most of mine away. I think I still have like an original Ben Folds 5 and a few Bruce Springsteen t-shirts, but that's about it. Anyway, Jason Leopold, the reason I invited you on here today was to celebrate you and to congratulate you.
I know you
worked really, really hard on this FinCEN Files. It was a 2-year massive investigation. Yes. It was you and your team at BuzzFeed News and the international journalists. Tell me the name of the organization.
Yes, it's the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ.
ICIJ.
They're best known for the Panama Papers.
Right. Okay.
If you're familiar with the Panama Papers, about these offshore tax havens that, you know, the wealthy use, that they exposed, that's, you know, that was their first, you know, very big investigation. They've been around for quite some time, but that, you know, that obviously took off. But yeah, this consumed my life in many different ways for actually more than 2 years.
Wow.
And, you know, the FinCEN Files, FinCEN is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. It's the intelligence arm of Treasury. Mm-hmm. And their mission is to ensure that, you know, that illicit financing, terrorist financing, money laundering, to combat that. That's their job, is to combat that, and to, you know, also ensure that the banks and financial institutions are adhering to, you know, the laws that require them to report any signs of, you know, dirty money flowing through the financial system. So
right.
FinCEN Files is, you know, is based on documents known as suspicious activity reports that banks are required to file with FinCEN whenever they spot instances of illicit financing.
Right.
And so it's not a secret anymore. I have a source that, you know, that was a whistleblower that tried to blow the whistle about global financial corruption, if you will, and wasn't getting anywhere and shared these documents with me. And it really showed how dirty money flows freely through the global financial system. So along with ICIJ, 108 media partners around the world, 400 journalists. Last September, we published our findings after a 2-year investigation and have been steadily, you know, kind of reporting this since that time. And, you know, it's had massive, massive, massive impact. It was seen as the it helped the final passage of the Corporate Transparency Act last year get passed. It's led to many reforms around the world. So yeah, it was a heavy lift.
Yes, and we talked about this as the story was breaking and as you were rolling it out. I thought this is going to be plastered all over the front pages. This is going to be on every TV show. And what I realized is, it's a complicated story, and the cable news shows, it's too complicated for them to get into in great detail. So they basically gloss over it. And that's a shame, because you did some amazing work here and you were a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Tell me about this. So you had this happen once before where you were a finalist in international reporting. What was it, like in 2018?
That's right. 2018. I mean, I have to give credit to where I work, BuzzFeed News. I mean, I've been a journalist for a long time, 25, 30 years.
Wow.
And, within the past 4 years, twice been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. And it's due to, the fact that I work for a news organization that, that supports this work. And what's notable as well is that BuzzFeed got its first Pulitzer Prize last week. In the same category, and international colleagues of mine had reported on China's mass detention of Uyghurs, and that won the Pulitzer, the first one. So, it's been an amazing honor, Nicole, to to be a finalist for a Pulitzer Prize for a project that we reported during COVID.
Right.
We were stuck inside. We weren't able to leave. And during a year where, COVID obviously dominated the headlines, and social justice, police, misconduct, Black Lives Matter.
Sure.
And, looking at all these stories that won or were even finalists for the Pulitzer Prize, they all kind of represented those, that theme. And the fact that money laundering and dirty money kind of broke through, I feel, I'm very grateful for that honor. And, it was kind of bittersweet, because 1 week before the Pulitzer, I was in a courtroom in New York, Southern District of New York, federal courtroom, while my source, who disclosed these documents to me, was sentenced to 6 months in prison for sharing these documents.
Right. So this is where I was going to go next. So this investigation was spurred by this whistleblower. I guess we can say her name now, because, right, Natalie? Is it?
Yes, Natalie Mayflower Edwards.
Edwards, right.
And I refer to her as May.
As May. Okay. So May provided you with a collection of confidential documents that on file with the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, that's FinCEN, and so she was a whistleblower, and so this is formed the basis, the beginning of the investigation. That's how it all started, and now, but she is a whistleblower. Why is she in jail?
So she reports to prison August 2nd, and let me make one thing clear here: these documents that she shared, they're not classified.
Oh.
They are not top secret.
Okay.
They are law enforcement sensitive.
Okay.
Which is not really a real classification. However, it is a felony to disclose these records. But what she was trying to share was the fact that they have these records, these documents, these suspicious activity reports, are filed with FinCEN, tens of millions of them, on an annual basis.
Right.
And that they just don't have the staff to investigate this. And she was trying to say that, look, there's a lot of dirty money flowing through the global banking system, and none of this ever gets investigated. And in fact, as we reported, when we finally took on this investigation with 400 plus journalists around the world, we had more personnel, if you will, than all of FinCEN.
Wow. You had more people investigating them than they had actually working on this.
And they get millions of these. Wow. And so it started out, it started in 2017 when I met her. And she was trying to blow the whistle on waste, fraud, and abuse within FinCEN. Some of the stories that I reported had to do with Paul Manafort, many of the people who were caught up in the investigation into the 2016, election, the interference. What was very interesting about Paul Manafort was the documents that we had, that what we were able to report, we were able to show that Treasury, DOJ, and many of these government agencies had known about, and in some cases investigated his financial misdeeds, malfeasance going back, well before he was ever in Donald Trump's circle, and just never did anything. And it wasn't until, he became the campaign manager afterwards that suddenly he landed on the radar.
Wow.
And so the point being that, this needed to, get some attention. And there were instances where she had reached out to Congress, to the Inspector General, to various entities that would, that were supposed to investigate this. And some did and said that, they couldn't substantiate any of her, allegations. So, as she noted in court, on the day of her sentencing, when she, read a statement, she just said that she couldn't sit by, I'm paraphrasing, and allow this type of corruption to take place. So, this was exhausting, because one thing that's also noteworthy is that, she bears certainly the brunt, and I don't want to take anything away from her because she's a hero.
Right.
But the government was on my ass, for 4 years.
Right.
And, I was never able to really, discuss any of that. And I, to this day, I don't know what, I know that when we reported the FinCEN files, in fact, I believe I've mentioned it on your show, that when we sought comment from Treasury, they said that, releasing these records is a crime. And that they were referring it to the Justice Department for investigation.
Oh my God.
So I don't know, what's happening, but it's really, really, really been exhausting trying to get this out. And it's, as much as I wish that, that our, news media at large would report on this as extensively as they do some other things, I'm still satisfied with, how it all, the attention that it's received, even 9 months after we published, because it's still, it's still making the rounds around the world, and it still has an impact. But, it came at a great cost, and our source is paying the price.
That's a shame.
That's
a shame. Do you notice a chilling effect with other sources that maybe they're afraid to, especially now after we find out that the Trump Justice Department was getting journalists' phone records?
It's always a challenge, Nicole. I mean, I think that one of the biggest, challenges of this job is getting people to a place where they feel comfortable that they can, discuss things and disclose things and share what they see, what they hear that may be of concern. The reality is that there's no incentive for them to do it, because of the potential cost that would result from making such disclosures. So you have to really, really, really be principled in order to step forward and speak up. I haven't seen anything, as of late, in terms of, or experienced anything in terms of sources, not wanting to speak or people not wanting to speak, but it also is largely why I, rely heavily again on the Freedom of Information Act in order to try to pry loose, those types of records that may shed light on what's happening behind the scenes, but. Journalism is so different, it's evolved in in a way where it's, you know, as you were noting, there's sometimes it's just hard to distinguish what is a credible news source versus right. one that's not credible, right? You know, you can now put up a website that, you know, say that would say that, you know, the Florida Herald.
Right. Right.
And you may think that that is a credible news source, you know, whereas back in the day, it's, you know, it was a bit more difficult to do that.
Yes. And now, again, my key phrase that whenever somebody sends me an article that's outlandish or something, I always go to the words, consider the source. Always look where it comes from. And it's if it's some, you know, made up news organization, sorry, give me some corroborating, articles. Show it to me in a few other places. Because if you're finding it in one place from the Florida Herald, chances are they made it up, just like Fox does with everything they do. Now more than ever, you really have to check and double check because you can't trust any of these sources.
No, it's true. You can't. So, you know, being able to, you know, having an opportunity to report what we were able to report. And really it's been, you know, the project itself was just about 2 years, but for me and my colleague, it's, you know, who reported on it, pretty much right after Trump took office in 2017, this has been a 4-year journey lay this all bare.
And in between, you were working on other things, too. I mean, you weren't only doing the FinCEN files because over the last 4 years, you've broken a lot of big news stories, a lot of them, unfortunately, dealing with Trump and the Mueller report and all that stuff. And I guess there was some overlap, with the overlap, when you're dealing with these financial records and you know that Trump was heavily, leveraged with Deutsche Bank and all these others, did you ever go searching for him in these FinCEN files?
Nicole, it was the first thing we looked for. I mean, that was the first thing that we looked for. And there was nothing, you know, there was nothing there. And it, you know, that itself raises questions.
Is it because he's not a big player? Because he calls himself a billionaire, but we have no proof he is. And the word is he's really in debt. He's got no money. He's not a wealthy man.
Yeah, we could not find anything. I mean, there was just nothing there on Trump. I mean, and largely... You know, part of it is that when we receive these records, it kind of like, again, it was a sliver of what FinCEN receives, but it really, really helped shed light on, you know, how broken the regulatory laws and you know, what FinCEN's mission is in terms of ensuring that dirty money stays out of the banking financial system. And that's when we realized that, you know what, we have a much bigger story here. We have a story that is just way bigger. So that's what we decided to,
So you started off looking into Trump and then you realized, wait a minute, we've got the biggest banks in the world who are doing some shady crap. And that's where you sort of went from there.
Yeah. We started off with various people who were caught up in the, you know, in the investigation, in the Russia investigation. And that is due, you know, the way in which that kind of like we segued from that is that various congressional committees, when they were investigating the interference into the election, one thing that they wanted to do is follow the money. So they reached out to FinCEN, they reached out to Treasury, and they asked for specific records on, they cast a wide net, and they asked for records on a number of people and entities that they believed or they got tips on were, you know, may have been involved in election interference. And, these individuals were, are in some cases well-known, like Oleg Deripaska, I'm trying to think who else, Paul Manafort, as I mentioned, Michael Cohen, and then banks, like you mentioned Deutsche Bank.
Right.
Deutsche Bank, they wanted some of these suspicious, you know, financial,
JP Morgan Chase, HSCB, right. Standard Chartered Bank, Deutsche Bank, and Bank of New York Mellon apparently. Right. You came out. They continue to profit from suspect transactions, even after they paid fines to U.S. authorities for previous misconduct and in some cases signed deferred prosecution deals. But they still kept doing the same shit, which is what you uncovered.
And that's exactly what we were trying to figure out here, is that, you know, it took a, because the data that we had, it was dense. It wasn't as if there were emails saying, hey, let's, right, you know, process this dirty money. We had to spend a lot of time with ICIJ, with all these other reporters to build a database, to kind of understand what these filings were. And that's when we realized that we have right now gained unprecedented insight. There's never been stories like this before. You've never had an opportunity to see, you know, first of all, these types of records, and to see exactly, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and how these suspicious activity reports end up being more of like covering your ass for banks, because all they have to do is just file it under the law, under the Bank Secrecy Act. And, you know, that's it.
And that's,
you
know, it.
And if someone investigates, they investigate. Or if they don't investigate,
nobody knows. You know, right.
They still process the transactions. So, like I said, I think the biggest thing that was a really stunning to me is that we published this in September, right before the election. And we honestly did not think that we would really gain any attention, you know, and the fact that we gained any, you know, any is a lot, right? Mm-hmm, you're competing, mm-hmm, you know,
right now, sure,
for the attention of people. And it was just, it really did take off in some ways. And, you know, initially the Times and the Post and not the cable outfits, but, you know, they reported on it. The New Yorker reported on it.
Right.
And then we ended up at
Pulitzer. Yeah. So when you're the finalist, so you're the first runner up, basically, do you get anything? I mean, what does the winner get? They get a medal or something. Do they get cash?
They get a medal. We get nothing, Nicole.
You get nothing.
We get nothing.
Ah, that sucks.
You get what you get.
And you don't get upset. Sorry, that's the mother.
Right. You get the opportunity. You get the ability, you know, the
bragging rights
that you were a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize.
And you are twice. So the third time has got to be the charm. So do you know what the third?
Knock on wood, Nicole.
Wood laminate in here. Yeah.
I don't know what the third one is. I mean, I'll tell you that my plan is to kind of take a break for a bit.
Really?
You know, I have been working nonstop for, and I really mean nonstop for 5 years
on
multiple investigations. And when I say a break, I'm not talking about like a year. I need to recharge a bit and kind of figure out what to tackle next. We'll figure it out. I mean, the thing is, there's no shortage of stories or issues that need to be investigated.
Things are good at BuzzFeed News. A lot of news organizations are having rough times. How are things there?
Yeah, things are okay. And BuzzFeed has had some rough times. It's we're a much smaller newsroom than we were when I joined only 4.5 years ago. You know, so I feel that I am of, you know, an age these days where I'm just grateful to have a job. You know, I'm able to work, you know, get a paycheck, and you know, that I'm grateful for that.
You've proven yourself. Look, who else is nicknamed the FOIA terrorist by the government, right? And I was looking for a better word. I say FOIA master, but
I like that.
I like it too. You are the FOIA master.
I like it. Thank you.
Let them say terrorist. I'm going to call you the FOIA master from now on.
I like that. Thank
you. Okay, good.
Thank you.
So Jason Leopold, the FOIA master. All right, you decide what comes next. There's so much. I mean, look, you've covered everything. I remember we hung out when you were down here in Miami on your way to Guantanamo Bay, and now there's talk
of... Oh my God, that's right.
Right? Remember? We compared t-shirts and music and stuff. I know.
Right.
We need another visit. So come to Florida. Take a few days off and come to Florida. It's actually nice and cool here.
I do remember going through some of your albums.
Right. That's right. Yeah. All right. Well, we're long overdue. So come visit.
Yes, we are, Nicole. We are. It's been too long.
Yes, it has. Jason,
our kids are growing up, Nicole. Kids are getting old.
My kid is 22. So if anybody wants to read the FinCEN files, go to just Google BuzzFeed News FinCEN, FinCEN. It'll come up for you. Or,
or FinCENfiles.com.
There you go. FinCENfiles.com. That was easy. All right. Yeah. Jason Leopold, I love you. I'm so proud of you. When I saw you with the Pulitzer, it's like, you know, finalist, okay, you deserve the whole thing, but at least it was kept in house. Do you get to touch the medal? Do you get to hold it?
I don't know how that works, but maybe, okay. You know, from afar, but more to come.
More to come.
I'm really, really appreciative and grateful for your support, Nicole, for a very long time. It's been many, many years. So you've always been incredibly supportive and encouraging, and you're a great friend.
And as are you. And I'm so proud of you. I just love watching the work you do. And I got to put in a plug for your book, too, because you've been so honest. Your career has been a roller coaster, as many of ours are.
It has been a real roller coaster.
But you wrote about it in this book called News Junkie that I think should be a movie that everyone should read. It's still available. And it gives when I read that, I mean, I already loved you. You were already my friend. And then I read that, I devoured it in about a day and a half. And I had this newfound respect for you.
So, thank you.
And I don't know why. I mean, I have nothing to do with your success, but I'm so proud of you every time I see you break another big story. So go get them, Jason. You're the best.
Thank you, Nicole. Right back at you.
Thank you so much. And happy Father's Day. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Father's Day this weekend.
Thank you. And I'll see you soon.
I hope so. All right. Take care, Jace. Thanks so much.
You too.
All right.
Bye, Nicole.
Bye-bye. Jason Leopold, he really is the best. And he's just as nice. I mean, you hear. That's the conversation. And I adore him. All right. With that, it's a weekend. Thank God. Have a happy Juneteenth and a happy Father's Day. If you want me to paint your pet's portrait, I'd love to. Just shoot me an email, Nicole@NicoleSandler.com, and we'll talk. And I will leave you with the news and tell you to have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Supreme Court on Thursday handed down three of the remaining 18 cases from this term. They began with the biggest of the bunch, upholding the Affordable Care Act for the third time. The Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that the 18 Republican-led states who brought this suit lacked legal standing to try to overturn the law. The 17 states that joined Texas argued that Congress's 2017 decision to remove the so-called individual mandate rendered the entire law unconstitutional. A decision in their favor would have resulted in eliminating the law and all the popular provisions it includes, like coverage for pre-existing conditions. But Justice Stephen Breyer wrote for the majority that the state's lawsuit was improper because the plaintiffs couldn't trace a legal injury to the individual mandate. Thus, they lacked standing. President Biden called the decision a major victory for all Americans benefiting from this groundbreaking and life-changing law, and he brought back memories of the day the bill passed by referring to it as a BFD, something he said in its full form to the then-President Barack Obama after the passage. In another consequential case, the Supremes ruled unanimously that a Catholic foster care agency in Philadelphia could reject gay and lesbian couples as clients in a case that pitted LGBTQ rights against the First Amendment's protection of actions reflecting religious beliefs. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the opinion, saying that the Catholic agency, quote, seeks only an accommodation that will allow it to continue serving the children of Philadelphia in a manner consistent with its religious beliefs. It does not seek to impose those beliefs on anyone else. He continued, the refusal of Philadelphia to contract with CSS for the provision of foster care services unless it agrees to certify same-sex couples as foster parents violates the First Amendment. This decision marked the most significant defeat for gay rights activists since the court's 2018 ruling in favor of that Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a same-sex couple. And the fact that this was unanimous, kind of disturbing. as was the third decision, frankly. Supreme Court ruled against six former child slaves from Mali in West Africa who sued food companies Nestle and Cargill, accusing them of perpetuating illegal working conditions in the global chocolate industry. The plaintiffs said in the 15-year-old lawsuit that they were trafficked to cocoa plantations in the Ivory Coast and forced to work. They said the company's pressure to keep down cocoa prices fueled a system that relied on enslaved children on cocoa farms in Ivory Coast and Ghana. Clarence Thomas, writing for the court, wrote that the plaintiffs couldn't sue because the actions took place in Ivory Coast, not the United States. There are 15 cases left. We'll get the next decisions from the court Monday morning, beginning at 10 Eastern. In other news, happy Juneteenth. President Biden on Thursday signed a bill establishing Juneteenth, June 19th, as a federal holiday commemorating the end of slavery, calling it a day of profound weight and profound power. June 19th, 1865 was the day when Union Major General Gordon Granger brought the news of President Lincoln's 1863 Emancipation Proclamation to Texas, where nobody bothered to inform the now freed slaves that they had indeed been freed. The Office of Personnel Management announced that most federal employees would have the day off on Friday this year, since Juneteenth falls on Saturday. Juneteenth is the first federal holiday created since Martin Luther King Jr. Day was recognized as a holiday back in 1983. Well, Congress has a lot on their plates these days, like the fate of the For the People Act. Unfortunately, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is now again guaranteeing that Republicans will filibuster the bill that Chuck Schumer is sending to the floor on Tuesday. The only remaining question seems to be whether all 50 Democratic senators will unite in support of opening debate on the bill, and then how they'll react when Republicans once again block it. Senator Joe Manchin, the thorn in the Democrat side, issued a memo this week saying what provisions he would support and basically telling the Democrats what they needed to do to the bill in order to get his vote. Stacey Abrams, in an interview, said that she could go for that. She could accept Manchin's suggestions. The perfect way to sum up what today's Republican Party is all about comes in their response. A bit of background first. In a leaked Zoom call released by The Intercept, we heard Joe Manchin suggest to the obscenely wealthy donors on the call that they offer outgoing Senator Roy Blunt of Missouri future income streams as a way to get him to support the idea of a January 6th commission and at the same time keep the filibuster going. In that call, you hear Joe Manchin say, quote, "Roy Blunt is a good friend of mine, a great guy." Well, Blunt showed what a good friend he is by responding to that news item saying,
"I think every one of us looks for opportunities to work with Senator Manchin, and we found those opportunities. I actually think when Stacey Abrams immediately endorsed Senator Manchin's proposal, it became the Stacey Abrams substitute, not the Joe Manchin substitute."
When will the Democrats get the message? Republicans are not playing ball here. They're just not into you. And I don't want you to think we're going to get through the news without another shooting. This time, one person was killed, 12 others injured in 8 drive-by shootings over a 90-minute spree near Phoenix on Thursday. A suspect has been arrested. Police say the first shooting occurred at about 11:10 a.m. in Peoria, with a suspect arrested during a traffic stop in the town of Surprise after 12:40 p.m. A gun was found in his car. 4 of the people wounded had gunshot wounds. The others were injured by broken glass or shrapnel. Investigators couldn't immediately determine a motive for the shootings, but they didn't think it was road rage. Just incredible. And how about this? Remember Mark and Patricia McCluskey? As a group of peaceful Black Lives Matter protesters were marching past their Missouri mansion last June 28th, they emerged from their home with guns drawn and aimed at the marchers. They later claimed that the protesters were trespassing by entering their gated private street. Well, they both pleaded guilty. He to fourth-degree assault, she to second-degree harassment. They'll pay fines of $750 and $2,000, respectively, and they must surrender their guns to be destroyed. Imagine that. And finally, didn't Obama know something was up with this guy? I'm talking about Dr. Ronnie Jackson, now Congressman Ronnie Jackson from Texas. He was Trump's White House physician who shared the results of Trump's first physical in office, claiming that he has great genes, that he told the president that if he had a healthier diet, he might live to be 200 years old. And, oh, yeah, claimed that Trump weighed 239 pounds. Yeah, that guy. Well, he wrote a letter signed by 13 other Republican lawmakers asking Joe Biden to take a cognitive test. The Daily Coast David Neuer points out, though, that the lawmakers had their own mental lapse in drafting the letter, repeating a line almost verbatim about the president's alleged forgetfulness. The letter reads, quote, "Unfortunately, your forgetfulness and cognitive difficulties have been prominently on display over the past year." The next sentence says, "Unfortunately, your mental decline and forgetfulness have become more apparent over the past 18 months. Someone get Ronnie Jackson a mirror, please. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports, I hope you'll check out The Nicole Sandler Show. We're live weekday afternoons at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, here on the Progressive Voices Network. And as always, available as a podcast afterwards from NicoleSandler.com. And while you're there, please click on that donate button.
You know, we have one of the most productive freight rail systems in the world. But at the same time, we haven't been investing in the long term. It's kind of like we've been deferring, sitting on our laurels, so to speak. And a